Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by Mazda of Everett. Don't forget, if you haven't heard, the Seattle chapter of WISE, that's Women in Sports and Events, wants to recognize a woman in our community through this new program called the Woman of Inspiration Award. Do you know a woman that gives her all to the sports and events community? It's time to celebrate her. Learn more at womenofinspiration.org. Vote Stacy Ross. What? Did Stacy put that in there
at
the
probably.
End?
Probably.
Of course she did.
She probably hacked our Google Doc.
She probably came in here and just put that in there at
the
end.
She would be a very deserving.
Yes, she would be a very deserving candidate amongst many others in our
amazing
community.
Are you
community.
Eligible, though, if you're kind of like on the committee as Stacy is a part of?
Is she on the committee?
Well, she's doing a lot of work with them.
She is. She's not on the committee, but she is doing
a lot of work. That'd be like the Jeopardy producer naming himself the next host.
Would it?
Jeopardy.
Well, maybe. I mean, maybe this is, you know, an active visible.
I'm not saying Stacy's not deserving of this, but
an active visible campaign, maybe, you know, so to speak. Like you're talking about it, you see her face, talk about it, you see her face. Like, you know, maybe there's just a strong correlation, and now I'm understanding why Stacy was so excited to, you know, take on this chapter.
Okay.
Vote Stacy Ross. I will be. I've submitted my vote already. Look. Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs, they showed up, they reported for mandatory minicamp, and we really haven't seen a ton of them this offseason. Why? Well, because they're recovering from injury, and they are going through their respective rehab process, but they are here. They are participating at walkthroughs in meetings, but they're not out there for the practice portion, the more intense version of practice. But we did get a chance to talk to them yesterday, and both very excited about this defense, and I think gave us a little bit of insight as to what that is. Here's Jamal Adams in cut number three talking about how the safeties, yeah, they like this new scheme.
It's really exciting. You know what I mean? We brought in some coaches that, you know, really are eager to, you know, teach everybody. You know, it's a defense that, you know, I know Diggs and I are really excited to be a part of. It's very aggressive, and to where we can be interchangeable, to where we can make a lot of plays in the back end.
So there's that part of it, right? I mean, hey, it's aggressive. You love to hear that word. I mean, certainly over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, this team has lost its stinger in terms of aggressiveness, in my opinion. You know, watching them, you know, play so soft and back and off, I mean, it drove me crazy. I mean, Brock Heward and I had a very dark, you know, text thread that we would have, you know, during the season.
How dark it gets.
You know,
Jake, I'd see your text to Stacy and I during football games, and Stacy and I are not fellow quarterbacks, so we don't, quote, get it the way Brock would. So I can only imagine how dark those got between you and Brock.
Yeah, you know, it was frustrating, you know, to not see a defense challenge an opposing offense or challenge an opposing quarterback, especially quarterbacks that could easily be rattled. But, you know, one of the other things that I think is very important is that you're not only aggressive, but that you're mixing up looks. And here in cut number 12, Quandre Diggs speaks to that, the versatility of this defense.
I mean, I think it's going to help both of us. You know, I think, you know, guys can automatically tag him and, you know, say he's in the box and he's blitzing or, you know, and slide his way. So, you know, I've always learned from the different quarterbacks that I played with, they always watch the backside safety. And now with the backside safety just showing something different or, you know, kind of sitting there, or you, the backside safety is me this time and it's not just Jamal, I think that's going to help a lot because, you know, you don't know the coverages. You don't know what we're in. You don't know, you know, what checks we have. So I think that's what would be dope.
So when you talk about, when you hear that from Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs, how does that make you feel?
Well, it makes me feel good because it sounds like they know what they're going to be doing. It sounds like they have a clear understanding of what is going to be asked of them heading into this season, where that has not been the case over the last couple of years, especially with Jamal Adams. Mm-hmm. As we saw him in his first year here in Seattle, he was asked to blitz a ton, ended up with 9.5 sacks in 12 games, and everybody's like, oh my gosh, this is a revelation at the safety position. And then last year, he registered 0 sacks, and was very much kind of left to his own devices out there. And at times, you know, did not play up to the expectations of the fan base, did not play up to the expectations of a lot of people who cover the league. And we saw plenty of boo birds come out for Jamal Adams' play because it was just like the Seahawks gave up two first-round picks for this guy.
Mm-hmm.
They gave him a huge new contract, and this is what we're seeing. And I don't necessarily believe that it was entirely Jamal Adams' fault for his drop in production last year. I think there was just so much miscommunication on the defensive side of the ball that he was one of the people on the defense that saw their production suffer, Carlos Dunlap being another who didn't register. I don't think he registered a sack until like the second half of the season.
Yep.
And then finally, when they kind of unleashed him, then we saw the Carlos Dunlap that we had been accustomed to, where he finished the year, I think, with 8 sacks total. Those two guys, to me, were just so lost in what they were doing at times that it really, really hurt the defense.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And that's a really good point, that it wasn't just Jamal Adams. I mean, you're looking at Carlos Dunlap. You're looking at Benson Mayoa. You're looking at guys that were productive the year before or had above 5 sacks for you that they really struggled to register, right? I mean, Kerry Hyder Jr. coming off a 10.5 sack season, I mean, produces what, 2 sacks, 2.5 sacks for you the following year? Like the scheme was not friendly to generating pressure and doing that on a consistent basis. And you needed to make that turn. You needed to make that change. And I think that is something that when you talk about the defensive changes and needs to change, I believe that it is something that will be welcomed. And also, I think what's important is that Quandre Diggs and Jamal Adams also expressed that these are defenses that they are familiar with because Jamal played it at LSU. He played in a similar scheme with the Jets. Quandre Diggs said the first 3 years of his career in Detroit, he played in this style of defense. Then the other thing to note is that, you know, go to cut number. Let's see here. Go to cut number 10 here. Quandre Diggs talks about the fact that this really isn't a totally new defense, that this was kind of a work in progress at the end of the year. And now this is just a new change of the guard, so to speak.
A lot of the same stuff is just different terminology in each defense you've been in. You know, I've been in the league 8 years now. So, I mean, I've had 4 different D coordinators and, you know, all the stuff is the same. It just has different lingo. So, for me, it's a blessing to be year 8 in the league and been able to put this thing together. And it's not like I'm a young guy where I never played this stuff before.
So, I mean, you're going through a new system, new terminology. You know, Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs are familiar with this, but I will reiterate this, is that you can move safeties, you can be as exotic with your pre- and post-snap looks as much as possible, but it only is successful if you're able to be on the same page, if the communication is strong, Curtis. And one of the things that makes me nervous, and it's not anybody's fault, but when you don't have Quandre Diggs and Jamal Adams out there practicing, like even for themselves, as good of players as they are, when you're not working together and you're not in sync chemistry-wise as to, all right, this is where I'm going to be and then I'm going to drop to here and this is how we're going to play off each other. Kobe Bryant and Artie Burns and Trey Brown and all those guys, they know how to work with Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs and the linebacking core. You can only be so exotic based off of the level of comfort that you have with one another, if that makes sense.
Familiarity, yeah.
Yes.
It's important to get everybody on the field and to have that spatial awareness of where everybody's supposed to be. That was one of the hallmarks of the Legion of Boom defense, is that everybody knew where they were supposed to be. We heard it a lot of times where there was so much unspoken things said to each other on the field because they knew where to go. Bobby Wagner just had to give a guy a look. He knew where to be. Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, they just had to give a guy a look. They knew where to be. Richard Sherman, same thing. Everybody knew their assignment because they were so familiar with each other. And here, with Seattle's defense changing as much as it has from year to year, there is not that familiarity. And so they need to spend as much time together. They need to spend as much time on the field together as well.
Yes.
In order to get that level of communication back that has been missing for quite some time. And I don't know if it was entirely Ken Norton that was the reason for the miscommunication, or if it, maybe it was the players and just their lack of experience with one another. But it was never, I just never felt comfortable over the last 2 years when the Seahawks defense was out on the field.
Yeah.
Even if the Seahawks had a lead, it was just like, oh baby, here we go.
I think it's a mix of all of it. And I think that if you place it all at the feet of Ken Norton Jr., I think it's a total mischaracterization. I really do. And it's an easy thing to do. Ken Norton Jr. was really bad. Ken Norton Jr. stopped this. Ken Norton Jr.
A lot of Seahawks fans.
No. Ken Norton Jr. had influence over everything. Sure. But you're telling me he had more pull and more sway than Pete Carroll? Sorry, I'm not buying that. And I think Pete Carroll and Ken Norton Jr. tried to do this thing the best that they could. And Pete Carroll tried to give as much leeway to Ken Norton Jr. as possible. But there was a need for change. And Pete Carroll recognized that. And you know, they wanted to kind of transition that in the second half of last year regardless, right? That you started to see them change their defensive scheme and their style at the end of the year last year. And you know, now they fully commit to that with Clint Hurt being promoted to defensive coordinator, Sean Desai and Carl Scott being brought in. So you see this all come together. But I do think that Ken Norton Jr. was somebody that was brought in here to be a purist of the old defensive scheme, the cover 3-4-3 scheme, and never really could grow successfully outside of that. And you didn't have the same kind of players. You didn't have the same type of talent. And this team was not coached to the strengths of their personnel. It was coached to the scheme. You need to fit our scheme no matter what. And I think that that was the ultimate detriment and the ultimate problem for that defense over the last 4 years. And now it's exciting to see a new change. And hopefully you're witnessing Jamal Adams get put in the right spots. And you see that uptick in production. You see, you know, Quandre Diggs being utilized in a unique way that you haven't seen before, right? And obviously that the pass rush comes alive. These are things that you hope to have happen. And obviously when you get any glimmer of excitement about the defense and the new changes, you get very excited, but you also realize that it's going to take some time for the chemistry to truly come together when you have so many new players that are going to be a part of this defense.
I'll say this about Pete Carroll, and we've heard a lot from people say, oh, he's 71 years old. How much can a coach that age change about his scheme, about his play calling, what have you? I'll tip my cap to him for him being at his age and saying, you know what? This defense that I've been running, it's time for us to bring in some new eyes. It's time for us to bring in some fresh blood and change things up. They're going to a 3-4 scheme. We've always heard it's a 4-3 defense with 3-4 principles. Well, now it's a 3-4 defense with 3-4 principles.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the secret sauce to get the Seahawks defense back to where it was in the heyday of this run here, because I would be stunned if Pete Carroll was satisfied with what he saw over the last 3 or 4 seasons. Because I know that every Seahawks fan out there was not satisfied with the level of play on the defensive side of the ball. I know the players in the locker room were not satisfied with it either. So I would imagine
Pete
is in lockstep with all that.
But, you know, I heard Mike Salk saying this earlier today that, you know, gosh, they were so limited by Ken Norton Jr. And, you know, they've been trying to – Pete's been trying to make this change for a long time, this, that, and the other – he was not held hostage, okay? If he wanted to make these changes sooner, the changes would have been made.
Ken Norton taping himself to the walls of the VMAX over my dead body.
Like, you're not going to make these changes. That's not exactly how this played out, but I do believe that there was a recognition and an understanding that this needed to change and this needed to grow in a new way, and you needed to have some new voices, and you needed a new group of people that could communicate and teach that style of defense at a much higher level. And Pete Carroll being committed to that, I think, is the absolute right move. And I think that was a good redirection by him going into this new era of Seahawks football. All right, let's get to four down territory.
This is four down territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First down to you, Jake. After listening to what Jamal Adams had to say yesterday, what did he say that should excite Seahawks fans?
Well, we talked about some of the versatility just before this, but in cut number five, I want you to hear what Jamal Adams says. This is not about him in particular, and he makes that very clear as to how this can help, this new defensive scheme, how it can help the secondary. Cut number five.
Yeah, I just think, you know, you can be so creative in so many ways, and not just me. You know what I mean? Quandre Diggs and, you know, Trey Brown and the Artie Burns is coming in, the Kobe Bryant. I mean, there's so many guys that can do so many things in the back end, and, you know, we can all, you know, do everything in the back end to where we can be creative, to where we, you know, give offenses problems, and that's the goal.
So why am I highlighting the fact that Jamal Adams is saying it's not just about him, it's about all the other guys in the secondary? Well, when you talk about being able to mix up your defense and to create problems, part of the reason is because you have players that can line up in different spots, that they can be incredibly versatile, and so you can't quite get the same read on what a defense is doing. Curtis, if I know that they have a nickel corner, and he is the nickel corner, he's going to play every single down in that spot, I know what he can and can't do, and most likely the positions that a defensive coordinator is going to put him in. If I know Jamal Adams is the strong safety and Quandre Diggs is the free safety and they truly play in those traditional roles, then I can very easily anticipate where they're going to be and what the tendencies are for those players. If you're able to have versatile players that can play inside, outside, that can be down in the box and be back, then it really truly is a lot more difficult to get a true beat on what a defense is doing. They can confuse you a lot easier than from a traditional perspective. And I think that that is what Jamal Adams is speaking to here. And if they can truly pull that off successfully, that's what it's going to require for them to exceed expectations that most of the national folks have for these Seattle Seahawks.
Second down. Jake, which rookie received high praise from Seahawks vets yesterday?
Well, the guy that kept that keeps getting praise from everyone is Kobe Bryant, your fourth-round pick out of Cincinnati. Here is Jamal Adams talking about Kobe Bryant and what he has been impressed by so far.
Very smooth guy, very smart, understands the game. You know, it's crazy. My DB trainer linked us up right before he got drafted. And, you know, I kind of hit him up just to give him some advice on, you know, what to expect and good luck in the draft and whatnot. And, man, here he is. So, you know, I was one of the guys that he hit up and as soon as he got drafted, and I was excited to see that. That's a hell of a pick, man. Definitely a steal.
So when you look at Kobe Bryant, I said from day one that this is one of my favorite picks that they got in this draft. I just think that he brings a package of maturity, understanding of who he is, and also just being a very darn good football player who just wasn't the flashiest guy, and I think a lot of evaluators took him for granted in this process. So I think that Kobe Bryant has the ability and has what it takes to be a very good contributor as a rookie and be one of those guys that can start for you week one of this season. And that would be a welcomed addition, because guess what? You don't have a whole lot of depth outside of this group. I mean, you know, not just this year, but in the future as well. And so if Kobe Bryant can step up to that challenge and can be one of these cornerbacks that earn the spot, that would be a fantastic development for the Seattle Seahawks. And when you hear things like this, it just gets you more and more optimistic. Now, we obviously need to see him going up against, you know, NFL receivers and Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf and seeing what that looks like. But so far, I've really, really been optimistic about what we've heard about Kobe Bryant.
Third down. Jay, Chris Carson absent from minicamp, obviously dealing with those neck injuries that sidelined him for most of last season. Did we get an update on him yesterday, or did we hear anything about him?
Maybe, kind of, sort of. I mean, I think it's more, I know I'm reading in between the lines here, Curtis, but the tone, if you hear the tone of Rashad Penny and you put in the context of how John Schneider and Pete Carroll have also talked about Chris Carson, that they have not been able to give a definitive report yet as to Chris Carson's status and his health, I think that this is pretty telling in the tone of Rashad Penny, how he answers this question about Chris Carson here. Cut 24.
You know, that's my best friend, really. You know, he mean everything to me. I try to communicate with him as much as possible. You know, I feel like he can bounce back from anything, though. The dude is tougher than nails. You know, just learning everything from him, you know, just made it easier for me to try to, you know, give the younger backs the same type of hope, you know. And, you know, you just hate to see a guy like that. But hey, I miss him, though, for sure. I feel like everybody do, too.
You know, look, he's talking about how he misses him, and there's no question about that. That doesn't mean he can't come back. But I also think there's a level of sadness there for Rashad Penny because he feels for his friend and because Chris Carson is really in a tough spot. I mean, this is his future. I mean, this isn't just something, oh, you know, whether he's a fit here in Seattle or not. This isn't just like a broken leg that you can come back from and you know he's going to miss some significant time, but he will indeed come back and be full strength. This is a neck injury that could flare up and could cause some serious problems long term. And with the way that Chris Carson plays the game, you can't guarantee that it isn't gonna flare up again, or even worse. That's the problem that the Seattle Seahawks organization has in evaluating Chris Carson's circumstances. And as we talked with Brady Henderson yesterday, it's an incredible risk that the organization would be taking on just in general by clearing Chris Carson to play. And I think that they have to make a real hard decision here when it comes to Chris Carson. I'm getting to the point, Curtis, where my sentiment about Carson is that I'm increasingly getting to the level of I would be in shock that he is available for this team and is on this roster come week one, just based off of the fact that they can't give a definitive statement about his health, how he's progressing, and everything else. I think it's just such a difficult spot that they're in and that Chris Carson is in health-wise. And, you know, I feel for him, and it's a bummer because he is such an incredibly talented player and running back, and he fits the style of Pete Carroll and how he wants to play so well. And it would be a bummer to lose him out to an injury like this.
Fourth down. Seahawks switching it up from a 4-3 to a 3-4 this season. Jake, I want to know from you, what is something you had been doing for a long time that you decided, you know what, it's time for a change?
That it's time for a change.
It's time for a change.
Got
to approach this differently.
A little differently? Okay. I would say, first and foremost, for a long time when I was a kid, I was a right-hander. And then Ken Griffey Jr. took over my life, and I was the biggest Ken Griffey fan, like we all were at that point, and I switched over to become a lefty. So that was time for a change.
All right.
The other time was during COVID, right? During COVID, I think a lot of people can sympathize here. I put on quite a bit of weight during COVID, and there was one point where I am trying to get off the couch, and I just pulled everything.
Oh, no.
In my back. And I'm like, you know what? It's time for a change.
We got to fix this.
I got to fix this. I am too young for this garbage, okay? and that, to me, it was time for a change. Time to watch what I ate. Time to focus on that. I'm not the young 24, 22-year-old kid athlete who's working out all the time, you know?
You don't need to stretch or anything prior to just doing mundane tasks.
Yeah, I mean, we were reminiscing just being a high school kid playing basketball, right? And
running
scrimmaging.
Full court,
nonstop.
Back-to-back games.
I am tired just thinking about playing four games back-to-back full court, right? So I just like, it's different, and I'm in my young 30s, right? So I shouldn't be talking like this. So that, to me, just being very being vulnerable right now, it was time for a change. It was time for a change.
All right, I like that.
Yeah. All right, you're listening to the Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Coming up next, we just were talking about Rashad Penny, but he says he's healthier than he's ever been and could, because the Seahawks are going to need him in the worst way. We'll explain why next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, we got to hear from a number of different Seahawks yesterday. Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs, and we got to talk to Rashad Penny, which was great to, you know, talk to him and see where he's at in his, you know, process. Obviously, someone who has been dealing with injuries his entire career, had an unbelievable finish to the year. Was the best running back in the NFL the final 6 weeks of the NFL season, and it wasn't even close. And I got to tell you, it feels great to be able to look at Rashad Penny in this way, knowing that you see his talent, you see what he is capable of doing, and then to listen to Rashad Penny say this in cut number 14, I think is very comforting.
I never had the chance to run around and, you know, actually get like an early jump to like training camp and camp for the next 6 weeks. So, I mean, I think it just made it more special for me to come out here and just run around and get in shape early instead of waiting till training camp to figure out my body or whatever. But I feel amazing, and this is the best I've ever felt. I'm excited about this year, and I can't wait to get going.
So you hear that, Curtis, and you it makes you realize that Rashad Penny has been hurt a lot. This is his first time that he is going into training camp fully healthy, right? And being able to have, you know, this next month to be able to continue to train, continue to get his body right so that he can be in the the best shape possible to start week one for this team and hopefully pick up where he left off last season. And this team needs him to do so.
When we say that Rashad Penny has had struggles staying healthy and being on the field, I don't know if that like fully encompasses just how tough it has been for him to stay healthy and get on the field, because last year he had the incredible finish to the end of the season. That was like the longest stretch of games in his career that he's ever started.
Yes.
He has appeared in 37 games in four seasons. In those four seasons, he's played in 37 of a possible 65 regular season games. He's played in just over 50% of the games that he could possibly play in those four seasons.
Yeah.
That's why you go out and draft Ken Walker. Because Rashad Penny right now is your most proven running back that is healthy. And yet you still can't rely on him to stay healthy because of, let's gesture at the last four seasons here, because he's been on the field for about 50% of the time.
Yes.
But, like you said, it is a great thing that he is healthy right now in minicamp, and I would assume he will be healthy, knock on wood, heading into training camp, that is mind-blowing to think about, that he has not been healthy heading into training camp really ever.
Yes.
And here he is in year five, finally feeling like, okay, got these injury bugs out of the way. I can finally go do what I was brought here to do.
It's crazy, and I hope it happens for him. And this team needs it to happen, because this team has transitioned from, all right, we want to be a physical team with a heavy run presence to complete that circle of toughness that Pete Carroll has talked about for years and years and years. But Russell Wilson and the passing offense is going to be that dagger. They're going to be the big play element of this offense. Whereas Rashad Penny showed you that when you have a true home run hitting running back, Curtis, that the running game can provide both. It can provide the physical element and be the big play weapon. And that's what they need Rashad Penny to be, especially when you have Geno Smith and Drew Lock at quarterback. You're not going to be relying on Geno Smith and Drew Lock to be throwing you know, a bunch of touchdowns and keeping the touchdown to interception ratio low while doing so. If you generate their volume of numbers at throwing the ball, they are going to turn the ball over. It's just the nature of this thing. It's the nature of quarterback play. If you don't have one of the top 10 quarterbacks in this league that, oh, by the way, still turn the ball over, you don't want to give those other guys that are in the back half of the league that amount of opportunities, because it's just not going to work out for you. You need Rashad Penny. You need Ken Walker to be able to be that big play element that you can consistently rely upon and give them those carries and then be able to take on that workload. And that's something that I know Rashad Penny is excited to take on, but also throughout the entire season, there's still going to be an element where you're nervous because he has yet to do it. And, you know, you saw his workload and his ability to take on that workload grow and increase, you know, 10 carries, 16 carries, 11 carries, 17, 25, and 23 in the last two games. you want him to be right in that range where you can consistently rely upon him to take on around 20 carries a game.
Yeah, and that is a big ask of somebody that has not been able to do that consistently in their career. Now, I am hoping that Rashad Penny is able to have that kind of workload this season, because that will have mean things are going great for the run game, because Rashad Penny, I think, is your assumed starter right now based off of the end of the season that he had a year ago. But Ken Walker, I imagine, is going to be nipping at his heels for the remainder of the season. And I think there may even come a point at some point this year where Ken Walker is getting snaps with the number one team, whether that be because Penny's hurt or because Walker's production has gotten to that level. But I think Penny still represents, at full health, the best opportunity for the Seahawks run game to be in the vision of what Pete Carroll wants it to be. Because you look at the numbers that they put up at the end of the year running the ball, five of their last six games, they had at least 146 yards on the ground. They went 146 against the Niners, 193 against the Texans, 170 against the Bears, 265 against the Lions, and 202 against the Cardinals. Mm-hmm. At 265, Urban Meyer would want those kinds of numbers. 250 and 250, remember?
Yes. Yeah. We could do that every game. That's how we build our identity.
Yeah, of course every coach would want that.
That guy was an idiot.
Absolutely he was.
Jeez.
But I think the Seahawks' best version of themselves in 2022 will be with Rashad Penny as the starting running back.
Yes.
And it is going to be of vital importance to keep him healthy and to get him on the field and to just make sure that he is producing. I mean, I don't even know if it's a reasonable expectation to expect him to be what he was at the end of the season throughout the course of a season.
It's not, but you know that that's what fans hold on to.
You know that that is the peak of his powers.
Correct.
And look, if he can show you that a few times a season, that is an incredible weapon to have.
It is an incredible weapon, and we'll see if they are able to sustain that. If they can have that level of production, Curtis, that will be the only chance, I believe. Yes, the defense contributes to it too, but the run game to me is so incredibly important for this offense. If they can have a top five running game, now you're talking about maybe this team has a chance to get themselves into the conversation of sneaking into the playoffs. If they don't have it, there's no way that they are able to get that done. So it's going to be really, really important. All right, we got What I Need to Know coming up next. Please text in your questions, any question, anything you have for us, 206-421-3776. Again, 206-421-3776. You're listening to Jake and Stacy on Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
All right, it's What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, and Electric. All right, let's get right to it. The 425 got a lot of good questions. We got to get through these. 425, is Stacy having hip surgery? Is that why she's out?
I think that's HIPAA.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Pardon the pun, but I think that's HIPAA. Now, are we going to?
I don't know if that's how it's
that's
properly
it
used, I mean, but sure, yeah, yeah.
Someone of her age, I think that is a potential procedure they could be having.
Yep, you do have to worry about that.
Based off of the info we've received, we're hoping she's back tomorrow, which would not be the recovery time from hip surgery, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
a hypothetical hip surgery. Look, we're not going to speculate.
No,
we will.
Yeah, we won't. But I guess you could say there's a chance. I mean, she's been gone 2 days, and we don't know when she's returning. So, I mean, it's a possibility.
We actually have not heard from her throughout the course of this show, and I know she's doing her best to not text in.
She's listening, but she doesn't want to text
exactly.
Us.
Okay, I think that's exactly what it is. She's got her phone on the other side of the room, like, I will not text Jake and Curtis. I will not text Jake and Curtis. Even though she so desperately wants
yeah,
to.
Yeah, well, what I know is that when she does come back, she better bring donuts. That's all I know. You hear me?
Yep.
Now we're up to, this will be three maple bars. A dozen donuts and three maple bars is where she's at right now. All right, the 360. How many All-Stars do you think the Mariners will have, Curtis?
I think at minimum two.
Okay, who are the two?
Logan Gilbert and Ty France.
All right.
I think
Does Julio have a chance?
Julio has a shot. He's going to need a big month of June, a big finish to the month of June here before all-star rosters are announced.
Yeah.
But I think Ty France and Logan Gilbert are about as close to locks as you can get right now.
Yeah.
Especially with France up near 330.
What about Paul Sewald?
He could potentially. I feel like saves are factored a lot, especially with relief pitchers.
Which is such a bummer.
I know, because he's been just as good as he was last year. His strikeouts are down from where they were a year ago, but the ERA is about the same. The hits per nine innings about the same. He's been the Mariners' best relief pitcher, and he still is. I would consider him to be one of the better relief pitchers in the American League.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. JP would have to have a monster June, but I think he's fighting a major uphill battle just because of the star power that is in the American League at the shortstop position. So I would love to be able to say JP as well, but we'll have to wait and see how this month plays out. 509, would KJ Wright be a good linebacker coach for the Seahawks? Now, here's the thing. My answer is no doubt, yes. He would be an excellent linebacker coach. Been around KJ for a long time. Know him personally as a teammate. This is one of the genuine good and smart players in all of football. And he's a very good communicator. Very good communicator. Understands the game in a way where he can explain it to everyone. Help, and that to me is what a good position coach can do. You do not see a lot of these players transition into that coaching lifestyle because it's a grind. It is an absolute grind, and they just got out of it as a player. And so could KJ Wright be a coach
eventually,
and be a very good one? I think so. But yeah, I would be surprised if he immediately transitioned into that.
KJ has a glow to him.
Yes.
Whenever he's in the room, you know that the energy is going to pick up,
mm-hmm.
that everybody's going to be a little more at ease, and just it's like, oh.
Yeah.
How's it going, KJ?
Yeah.
Like, he is one of the genuinely nice. He's one of the nicest dudes to ever grace the Seattle sports scene.
Which is funny because a lot of the guys on the Seahawks that I was there with, you could ask me a number of them, I'd be like, oh, it's one of the best teammates I've had. Oh, one of the best teammates I've had. I mean, it was just such a good group of guys. And talented players that it was so much fun being a part of that. And KJ, no doubt being one of them. All right, here's a good one. 425, have you ever had a laughing fit at an inappropriate time like a wedding or a funeral?
I mean, of course.
Of course?
Well, I mean, I don't know if a wedding or a funeral, but like maybe in a meeting here at work,
okay.
Probably.
Yeah.
Definitely like growing up in church, like, mm-hmm. The pastor's giving his sermon, and you're like 10 or 11 years old, and your buddy sitting next to you says something, and you're just cracking up, and like your parents give you that look, mm-hmm. like, you better be quiet or else we're taking you out.
I will tell you, nearly every single day as a dad to, when they get to that age about being around like 2 years old and, 2 years old and above, where they can start communicating and they can start talking. And when they act out, when they do things, like you try so hard or they say something inappropriate and you're supposed to get on them and you're supposed to correct them, but it's just so funny. you just can't help yourself but laugh, right? And you're trying to discipline your kids, but at the same time, it's so funny. I think that's one of the hardest things as a parent, to come down and be stern and to try to teach them a lesson, but at the same time, you just want to laugh so hard, and sometimes you just can't contain it. It happens to me nearly every day. All right. Well, you hear the music. That means it's time to wrap up the show. Thanks for all the questions to the Mac and Jack's text line. We appreciate it. It's been a blast today. I'm Jay Keeps, filling in for Stacey Ross as the host. We hope she comes back here shortly. Curtis Rogers been hanging out with me, and we've got Brady Bones behind the glass. So let's go get that series win.
All right.
Let's go, Mariners. Rubber match. Let's go, Logan Gilbert. We will be in to talk about that tomorrow and much, much more. Don't go anywhere. Wyman and Bob are coming up next.